ladies and gents, we live for this shit. This podcasting shit. So, here with me tonight is Johnny Boy Patoki.
How's it going? Glad to be back. Again.
I couldn't believe it. I believe you. Great. So, yeah, this was a long time coming. We all had all these other options. I had plenty of other things. I had design poster art for them. Like, we're going to get to it. I don't know when. I definitely prefer
this. This is one I've been looking forward to, too, for the most part.
Yeah, and I just figured it was just like the perfect matchup. It's like, okay, we're talking about basically just a video game, PlayStation influenced Sony franchise. This is the perfect way because it's just like all kinds of a weird, atypical kind of spy.
Tony Hawk Extreme Secret Agent.
Right, 1,000%. It is Tony Hawk Pro Skater, you know, whatever meets, I don't know, the Transporter, question mark.
The first one, yeah, I'd go with that, sure.
Oh, man. So, in this Zondercage cinematic universe, it stars Vin Diesel of the Riddick and Fast and Furious films. Featured in these movies is Samuel Jackson as NSA agent Augustus Gibbons, Martin Sokos of Lord of the Rings and Star Wars and Equalizer fame as main terrorist Yorgi, Asia Argento, pre-Me Too scandal as Yelena. And additionally, it also has William Dafoe as the traitorous General George Deckard, Ice Cube as the recurring, ex-like soldier slash ex-con turned agent. Spy. Yeah, agent Darius Navy Seal. Stone. Navy yeah. SEAL. Model Sonny Mabray from Snakes on a Plane and Hillbilly Elegy as Charlie Mayweather. Pun? Question mark.
Yeah.
And additionally, it also features Eve, Donnie Yen, Topeka Popudakane, Ruby Rose, Tony Jaa.
Oh, that's right. Ruby Rose Rory is in that McCann. One.
Yep. The Sopranos, Al Sapienza.
You forgot Scott Speedman. From
Scott Speedman.
He wasn't Felicity, but he played a...
From Underworld.
Yeah, Underworld. He played a Lycan. Yeah.
Yep.
Lycan Vampire Hybrid. You know, it's funny, you're naming all these names, and most of the good ones were in the first and third one.
Probably, yeah.
Most of the big name ones.
Yeah. NFL player Tony Gonzalez.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Soprano star Al Sapienza. Jessica Jones and Dark Matter star Terry Chin as a Chinese spy. And Nina Dobrov from Vampire Diaries. Need a pretty face with limited acting. Supermodel and Orange is the New Black star Ruby Rose. First thing I saw her in, and I fell in love. And Little Miss Sunshine star herself, Toni Collette,
cashing it in. Right, she was Little Miss Sunshine, and she wasn't that, wasn't she?
Oh yeah, everybody got fucking paid, if not blown on this movie.
Yeah, no shit.
No one looked at the scripts. They didn't give a fuck. It was like,
I kind of agree to some extent, but I will say. Much like other movies I've talked about, in the beginning, the first one was a far better movie than expected. Like, I truly, really liked the first movie. I liked the soundtrack, and I liked that it felt more like a Bond movie than all the Bond movies do.
That's a good point, because at that point, they were using CGI, and this wasn't trying to be high class or anything. So, I meant to... So let's backtrack a little bit before we really nuke the fridge on this. Hopefully not Crystal Skull style, because fuck that. But so what was your main intro into action movies?
Into action movies? Wow.
I knew you were reading Tom Clancy, and I was kind of doing a lot of sci-fi and occasional horror. Yeah. And
I watched a lot of sci-fi when I was young. I mean, I guess Bond would have been... back in when I was a little kid, when it came to this kind of like when it came to like espionage and spies, it probably would have been Bond. Mm-hmm. And I think when I was a kid, I remember watching they still do. They run the marathons, and back in the 80s, they did that too. They just had less movies. And yeah, it might have been like The Spy Who Loved Me, or it was probably a Roger. No, well, you know what? It may have been Dr. No or Goldfinger, because my dad always watched them when he was, you know, he grew up in the 50s and 60s. So it was probably a Sean Connery Bond movie when it comes to this kind of, you know. And then it's another thing that I get hooked on, right? Like I like Indiana Jones kind of adventure films, no matter how bad. And then anything with spies. So, but yeah, probably Bond. And, you know, when I was a kid, Bond was all about supervillains wanting to take over or destroy the world or weaponize space or.
Yeah. Many, you know, even noted how the plot at the end of the first one is kind of like Die Hard with a Vengeance, where he's got this whole underground group of thieves, and then he's unleashing like a bunch of like radiation poisoning or some shit.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
So I had plenty of cousins who had seen it. My grandmother knew about this and was like, that sounds naughty. And but I was definitely into spy assassin stuff. So by 06, 07, I had seen as many of the popular ones as the Die Hard and Rambo movies on TV, as well as the Bourne Identity ones and Bond films with my dad and uncle. And so it's like, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm all into this. Yeah, there's some movies where it's like, I see that they're bad, but I kind of want to know more about them, like how the plot came about. Why did they cast these famous or infamous in some extremes, you know, celebrities and NBA players and rappers in one giant action buddy cop movie? And so I would always go through the maze because you just never knew. You could never get a reliable thing. There were ones that critics really praised but audiences hated because you couldn't see the fights or what have you, and then vice versa, where, you know, critic score was 40%, audience score was 60-80%, and it was playing on all the AMC, TNT, USA network channels. And this one was very popular. Like the first two movies, they played the shit out of them. Like it would be the Fox Sunday night movie, as well as on FX and TNT.
Right, the first one had pretty solid reviews too. I mean, 3.5 stars out of 4.
Yeah, Roger Ebert really praised it. He loves his gorgeous women and awesome Jackie Chan type stunts, and it had that. And I saw mixed reviews. I mean, and I was not a Fast and Furious guy. This was way before that franchise got even more batshit crazy. And I was
I liked the first two, and that's about it.
Whatever works, man. I was into Riddick. I loved how
Riddick was good.
That was by the original writers of Alien, and they took a Star Wars, Star Trek type universe with bounty hunters and unusual sci-fi planets, and it was a mixture of horror and action. I was like, in a sci-fi scenario, I'm like, I am down. I was just like, okay, you know, Ice Cube, he doesn't have as much charisma as, say, DMX, and he definitely doesn't have some decent dramatic range like Ice-T, but he's an okay comedian. Same deal with Vin. I'm like, okay, I'm kind of digging Jason Statham, even though I kind of find some of his movies very lame, but my pros are
still... But you still watch it for him.
Kind of. I was just... Yeah. It was a mix of everything. It was like, he's kind of more comfortable doing something here because he's not hogging at all, and there's a big giant ensemble, and it's kind of got all these different elements. And so then it just got to that point where it's like, when they kept coming out with these and they kept teasing that they were going to bring it back until they finally did bring it back one more time. And I was just like, go figure that if there's one thing these movies all do, it's be bad shit crazy. Like that is the only purpose for these movies. So the whole thing of, you know, like I would even explain it to certain people, and some people were taking this way too seriously, what I was saying. And others were like, sounds fun, because they want Brain Dead and all their action movies. And there were others who were like, so did you like it? I was like, just go see it. It's going to really depend on your mood. So me telling you whether or not you'll like it is really redundant. Like for every other person who likes something like Taken or The Expendables, there's going to be a bunch of people who are like, oh, I hate that kind of action or crime thriller movie. So you don't know until you know. You just honestly, there's some movies you've got to physically see.
I will say the first one with Vin Diesel is truly a time capsule from the period. Like I think it's a great movie to watch though. It's a lot of fun. But if you want to know what the late 90s, early 2000s were like, it was extreme sports. Everything had an X on it. It was energy drinks. The music from the movie is what was pop. I mean, it really is kind of like it personifies that part of the decade.
Like every movie basically made in the 2001 to 02, it does open up with "Let the Bodies Hit the Floor" by Drowning Pool.
Yeah.
And but for this, I used to have the soundtrack to the first two movies. Like I downloaded them off Mediafire one lazy day and I was like, you know, I'm kind of digging some of Exhibit's grooves on the second movie, but I'm really digging again that end song by Bush's Gavin Rosdell, Adrenaline. For whatever reason,
that's a good song.
That makes me want to go and work out, and I do not work out.
The first movie featured Rammstein, and they were, even had him in concert on screen.
Yeah, they're the opening band.
Like I knew Rammstein for years, but that was like the introduction for a lot of people. Like, hey, have you ever heard that band before? I'm like, yeah. I have, as a matter of fact.
There you go.
But it was just...
It was their loop in the ring. It was their kind of just chance to be in a more mainstream American audience.
Yeah, and as overblown, I guess, as these are, the first one and the third one, I'm going to hold my judgment on the second. The first and the third know they are, and they do well, like, laughing at themselves about it to some extent. Like, the first one, nothing in the first one takes itself too seriously.
Yeah, just so just for those who want to know, so Rick Wilkes, who was like had done like this movie, I think he did like Airheads, and then he did like some other movie with Jack Black and Peter Berg that was also about pro skating or some shit. And
yeah, Airheads, yeah.
Some shit like that or something like
Glory
that.
Glory Days was another one.
Oh, okay, yes. So, yeah, he had all these kind of just cult movies. Yeah. And so the directors associated with all three, respectively, Rob Cohen, you know him of Dragonheart, Mummy Free, First Fast and Furious.
Yeah.
And The Boy Next Door, that stupid Lifetime Cinemax movie with J-Lo. And Lee Tamahari, who did the final Pierce Brosnan movie, Die Another Day.
Yep.
Which you can't recommend, but The Edge with Anthony Hopkins and Alec Baldwin, cool survival movie. Next with Nick Cage, time travel movie, and Once We're Warriors. So yeah,
they're all people that had like chops. Like they've all
a bizarre mixture of TV work. Like Rob Cohen had done Miami Vice back in the day for Michael Mann. TJ Caruso, who had all these like it or hate it movies, like Taking Lives, and what's the movie with Shia LaBeouf, which is like a Rear Window kind of tribute. Disturbia, that's the one.
Yeah.
And he had all those, and then some other, like I Am Number Four. And other than that, he had pretty much just done a bunch of other flops and like a few select episodes of shows like The Shield. And so I'm very half and half with those guys, because it's like Cohen doesn't seem to have original scripts, but he has good stunts in his movies.
It was a very unlikely group of people that came together.
Yeah, and Tamahari's kind of the same way, where he started out as kind of the indie violent drama guy and then just kind of did all these disposable action movies. And Caruso's kind of the same one, where he's just who you get if you don't have the budget for a Roland Emmerich or Michael Bay, but you don't want to spend it on another fancy music video kind of guy. So you're just like, I'm going to go with him because he seems to like Brian De Palma, Hitchcock type themes. So, and like you say, they're all in these movies. And you're like, this is not typical of anyone's style. But yeah, I'm sure they have stories. I'm sure they got stories.
Oh, I'd love to hear them, because like the first movie, there was a lot of what I liked about it. First off, it was kind of like a video game, right? Like you said, you know.
Oh, totally.
Except you're seeing all
the cinematics play out.
Yeah, it was very stylized, like how Miami Vice used to be. Not stylized in that same way, but it had that like you knew you were watching something that was trying to be a slick movie, right? Like even though it wasn't really Miami Vice or Heat or something, but it had a certain style to it that worked. It was like it was a refreshing take on something, because every movie that you saw up till now that had a secret agent, that agent was always like smooth and suave, and you know, they were all like Bond, right? They were all just the Bond knockoff. Here comes this guy that he's basically, everyone counts him out as just a muscle head.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, yeah, we need a new type of secret agent, someone that fits in with today's crowd. And at the time, I was like in my 20s. I'm like, you know, that's a pretty clever idea, because we all watch the same, like every secret agent had a cookie cutter persona, right? Like,
right.
And it varied a little bit. Like you had the new Bond with Daniel Craig, where it was a little more serious and it was a little more Jason Bourne-ish than like the old Bond. But generally, those were your two archetypes, you know, like the Clancy style or like the Bond style. You didn't have, you know, they all had some, they're all Navy SEALs. They were all ex-military. They were all something. And they're like, hey, you're pretty badass with stunts and a skateboard. You know, so it was kind of cool. It's like, hey, look, an average guy saving, like, it was almost, I don't want to say average, because look at Vin Diesel, the guy's huge. But it was kind of like that, right? It was like a regular guy, let's say, brought in to save the world, you know?
Well, what else would they be
nice, you know? It was kind of a nice, you know, thing in Asia. Argentina was, it was the Argentino or Argento, sorry. It was the first movie I think I really saw her in that I was like, I like her.
Yeah. Before I knew she was a total hypocritical, you know, statutory rapist, I was like, yep.
As long as she doesn't talk.
Well, even then, I was just, I knew she had a crazy dad who did all these great giallo horror movies, and she had been in some of the lesser ones. But I liked Land of the Dead, and I liked some of the other movies she had been in. And then there were other ones where I'm like, okay, those are bad, but God damn, is she just fucking gorgeous.
Yeah. So the first one, the plot was pretty solid, and it was nothing special. It was a typical kind of spy plot. Try to save the world from a terrorist group. The third one, it was a relatively simple plot too. It wasn't like overblown, it wasn't over convoluted.
But wait, there's more.
Well, hang on, I'm getting to that. So the first and the third one to me, I can watch. I have no problems with. Because neither tries to be something they're not, and you know, they're not convoluted. The second one, I don't know what the hell was going on. There were too many characters. It was like Tom Clancy wrote a outline for a book and then kind of filled in some parts, didn't finish it, passed away. Somebody picked it up and said, hey, let's just make it this way. Because it was like, it was trying to be like a techno spy thriller with like multiple government agencies kind of fighting each other and multiple conspiracy. And it just, oh my, it was so convoluted. And it just, man.
So definitely.
Like, I like Ice Cube a lot, but.
If you're going to watch these movies, definitely go in with kind of a Mystery Science Theater kind of mode.
Especially the second one. Like, even the acting in the second one, for having like a lot of, well, for having like Ice Cube. Like, remember the scene when he's on the bridge and all the shit blows up and he looks back at the camera and like winks?
Yeah. And that's not, believe it or not, that's not even his body. Like, that was.
Yeah. And the worst part about that is that's not done in either of the other two movies anywhere. Like, never were they breaking the third wall until that point. Oh, and it was only that one little second. They break it
in Part Three.
Well, yeah, they do. That's true.
Because near the end, that's true. He starts saying, I live for this shit. And then he looks at.
Well, that's true, but it's done in a way that's like more fluid, right? It's not like abrupt, like all this stuff blows up, he turns and just kind of winks. It's like,
because I think all these movies are extremely sarcastic.
Yes, and that's what I like about them.
And I think I would keep watching parts of them on again because they just air them to death on FX or whatever, and I'd see people even make. This is back when YouTube was all the rage. And sometimes you want to rewatch a movie just to see what other people like about it.
Yeah, sure.
They would make a shit ton of action music videos, and almost always someone would like stitch something up with like, I don't know, like Saliva or Disturbed and just use action scenes from these movies. And I was like, maybe I better rewatch these because I'm taking these plots way too seriously and they're really not taking themselves all that seriously.
No, and I think it was one of the misconceptions when a lot of people went to see them too, is they thought they were, I don't know what people were expecting. Like, I'm like Vin Diesel's in it, so it can't be that serious of a movie.
Maybe. I mean,
but I like Vin Diesel. I like Knockaround Guys. I think he's great in that.
I mean, love Knockaround Guys, Saving Private
Ryan. Such an underrated movie, and he puts in a really good, solid performance.
So when I saw Vin, I definitely preferred it when he was like more brutal, especially with Knockaround Guys.
Oh, and
A Man Apart.
Yeah.
And because that was, and even Strays, his indie, because at that point he wasn't playing Mr., you know, Dom, you know, selfish prick going around blowing up, you know, other car thieves and government agents.
And
but yeah, it's like here, So for a while, it seemed like he and Statham were like going to be trying to be kind of the next Charles Bronson. Now, I would argue Carl Urban, Frank Grillo, and even Liam Neeson and every other person, Denzel, to some extent, are trying to do a Bronson.
Yeah, yeah.
Anything that doesn't star Tom Cruise, they're pretty much doing that. And but Tom Cruise and Vin Diesel are kind of the same person in that
they play the same character almost all the time.
They play the same person, and they want to do all the stunts. You know,
yeah.
Tom Cruise does it because of his crazy, you know, entity that he thinks is a religion, and Vin just does it because he really does have that huge an ego. I mean, that there's a reason why Statham and The Rock decided to just jump ship and do their own shit because they were tired of putting up with his crap. So it is.
Yeah, and like, it's funny that you say that too, because like I had that discussion and just real quick about it. It's like, yeah, I get it, right? Like Statham and The Rock and him are all three pillars of like action, right? But to be fair,
at the moment,
and whenever the Fast and the Furious franchise basically is, you know, I mean, it's like I don't think he should have been the way he was with them. But that being said, it's like when George Lucas made the prequels and all the people that worked with him were from the original movies. And in the originals, he would ask advice. And in the prequels, if somebody offered advice, he'd tell them, no, I don't want to hear it. Because they were his babies, right? And I think Diesel kind of gets carried away with that. Like, well, these are my films and this is what it should be. And it's like, yeah, they're your films.
Especially when
these two guys make pretty good flicks.
If I'm going to argue about movies, it better be something
that
is a real life story. I'm telling a story about my father who got exiled to, I don't know.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He took it clearly too far.
This is like, this is a silly movie to be having an argument over.
I would hope that the three of them don't still have a grudge against each other.
Oh, they do. They 100%
you know,
do.
You would hope at some point they would bury that, because there's going to be an expendable 6 or 7 at one point. We're going to need these three.
That's what I think is also bullshit. That would be the perfect. I even feel like Part 3 in a way kind of was kind of their own Expendables. It's like, let's do our tribute to what we got famous doing 20 years ago. And then it's just like, at the same time, like The Rock's been asked to join the Expendables a few times because there's a lot of people who like his work on Faster and The Rundown and The Walking Tall remake. And he kept saying, oh, I'm not ready. And then the real story is that, you know, everyone's going to get paid $10K for the day. And so if you're going to put him in there, it would have to be a really fast cameo. And that would mean kind of risking his net worth. And I think my pal, Matt Poirier, of the Direct-to-Video Connoisseur, you might know the podcast or blog.
Yeah.
And I think he said it best, is like, at this rate, every celebrity, especially those who were in Hobbs and Shaw, you know, Statham, Kevin Hart, Idris Elba, even Ryan Reynolds, they are in financial security mode. So they're going to strategically pick two movies a year, and it's got to be a movie where they're going to be great in, regardless of whether or not, you know, it's a good movie.
But it's their choice, is basically what it comes
down to. And so one of them has to be one that is guaranteed. So it's got to be a superhero or a book adaptation or Oscar bait, and then the other one can be whatever, but it still will churn out a bunch of crowds. So you got to pick and choose, especially in COVID, and you got to film fast. So it's like, at that point, it's like, this is what they're doing. They're going to do easy stuff, and it might be another decade before they really do something they want to do that their fans really wanted to see them do. So,
yeah. I'd like to see Liam Neeson not make every movie exactly like Taken.
Yeah, and it sucks because
it was cool to see him become an action star for that little bit, but it's like Taken was great, and you know it takes place in Europe, and his daughter and her friend are kidnapped and brought to Europe, and he chases them down. And then the second movie, he goes to vacation in Europe where everyone's looking for him already.
There's that, and then there's other movies which he does, but unfortunately, even though they weren't meant to be Taken type movies,
they become it.
They were advertised as. So I saw A Walk Among the Tombstones in the theaters, and that was a great Serpico 7 type mashup. And not enough people saw it despite decent reviews. But yeah, you look at the trailer and you're like, he's stalking angry on a phone. That looks like a Taken movie. I'm like, but you see the actual movie. I'm like, no, this is a very slow burn neo noir, end of the millennium, 99 set. serial killer movie. It's more like The Bone Collector or Silence of the Lambs, if anything. And it just sucks that, like you say, it's like, if they're not typecast, then the trailer will wreck it every time. And it doesn't matter if it's a good movie or not. The damage is done based on whether or not it makes money at the box office. And
yeah,
the people I mentioned at the start, I mean, Frank Grillo and Carl Urban, they're caught between doing a big mainstream movie for like Millennium Films or Sony or even Marvel. And then they do a video on demand kind of slugfest. So it's just like they have to pick and choose. And they are almost semi...
They're not B actors, but they're not A actors. They're like right in the middle.
Yeah, they are in between.
Like, A minus.
Right. Or B plus. It's like they're in these B scripts, production values, you know, made for $2 million in like Louisiana or Atlanta. And then like you say, it's just everyone else passed on it. So it's like, okay, Bruce Willis is retired. Gerard Butler's in Scotland. Statham passed on it. So guess what, Urban, you're next.
Yeah, very much. And Diesel's a pain in the ass to work with and wants producer credit. So you're next, Urban.
There you go. Next New Zealand. Oh yeah, and Russell Crowe, he's too expensive. So yeah, you're next. New Zealand Australian guy, you're next because Hugh Jackman's not here and you cost less. And yeah, Frank Grillo, same deal. It's like, okay, we need a Charles Bronson type. We like you from those Purge movies, so we're gonna put you in these.
Yeah.
Because we just can't afford Chris Evans or Anthony Mackie right now. We can't even afford Henry Cavill or Ben Affleck. So
you're serviceable. Next, get in there.
You're the next up on the spy thing. Matt Damon and DiCaprio are getting older. Yep. George Clooney just doesn't act anymore. So you're going to have to be on this.
It sucks when you see like, when you have these action stars that really could work really well together, but the egos get in the way, you know?
Oh, 1,000%. And then we see other people like Scott Atkins who are starring in other movies with, you know, veterans, and then even other people like Don the Dragon Wilson and Dolph Lundgren appearing now and again still. It's like, why was their star just not bigger? And it was just one of those, just like, it wasn't like Van Damme where they burned all their bridges, or Seagal, where they were always a shithead, but eventually their last movie underperformed. So then they finally had a reason to kick them out and not kiss their ass anymore. And so it's like, these guys is like just always the wrong place at the wrong time. It didn't matter if they did a good job or not, or if they even grew as performers. It was just their movies were like shown in Bulgaria and Japan overseas, but in the States, we got them straight to HBO or Blockbuster.
Yeah.
So it's just,
wow. I mean, Bruce Campbell's a lot like that to some aspect.
Yeah.
In his defense, he kind of prefers doing what he did. Like, I remember reading somewhere that he rather enjoys being the B movie like king, you know?
1,000%. And then he even started getting pickier about what kind of B movies he did. Yeah. He didn't even say, I'm not going to be in your piece of shit movie unless it's really like a price I can't turn down. And it is a pretty clever horror comedy. You
know? Well, hopefully Diesel one day gets a little humbled about something, about stuff, because I don't mind him as an actor. I think, especially as an action star, I think he's great. It's just, you can only be so difficult to work with before no one wants to. And you know,
it's like The Rock evolved, and
like
you say, I mean, some of these other guys evolved, and
Statham was a dancer in a dancer in a music video, and look where he ended up.
A Olympian wannabe, and
he was an Olympic swimmer wannabe too. Yeah,
and so after the Guy Ritchie crime movies, then you know, and The Transporter, he was kind of the cult guy. And
Clive Owen is another one that never quite took off.
1,000%. When I saw both,
I saw the BMW short film with him and Madonna in it, where he was
the driver.
And I was like, oh, that's just, and then the Transporter movies right now. So I'm like, oh, maybe it'll be Clive Owen because that's what he played. Well, in it. Nope.
And despite Owen being in the Bourne Identity and
a lot of big movies,
a lot of B pictures, and then
he was great in Shoot 'Em Up too. I don't even remember the plot, but that movie's awesome.
It was more like a free roaming video game version of Falling Down, but
pretty much.
And
well, he's got to protect that baby. I remember that part.
1,000%. And so I see him in Last Nights and the movie with Statham and De Niro called Killer Elite. I'm like, why is he not a bigger star? And
why did he never?
It's just one of those. I kind of even considered when I saw actors like Jason Patrick and Thandie Newton, Newton just kind of was in some movies that were big, but weren't always necessarily critically acclaimed.
Until, Jason Patrick's career got hurt by Speed 2, though.
Well, that, and apparently I did see how he was very, like, a stubborn method actor, so he was kind of his own worst enemy, even though he's a goddamn good actor. So it was just like, it was just one of those, after a while, Hollywood, if the offers stopped coming, then eventually, before we had video on demand and festival movies and what have you, or just working with theater directors making their debut on a festival acclaimed movie, it also got down to, like you say, is just what was your last big hit, and do people just remember you from that, or did one of those filmmakers, are they gonna throw you a bone on their next project that they're doing 5 years down the road? You don't know, and until after the fact, if they do a memoir and they're like, I had a substance abuse, or my agent just was asking too much money and I just wasn't a remarkable name. No fault of my own. My movies were popular. I was recognized, but they underperformed. And I think it's just the market we make them in. Everyone just can't make anything for under $20 million. And now if it makes under $40 million, it's
a flop.
A flop. And it's just tricky because, like, these were making crazy stupid money.
To be fair, back to the Triple X movies, State of the Union is considered a box office bomb. It made $71 million. I mean, it cost $113 to film, but
that's it, just still made
$71 million, and it's a bomb, you know? But that second one, it literally is my least favorite of the three.
And like, it's all good. Well, we'll get to our final ratings here in a bit on a five-star scale, but... No, they're still supposedly doing a fourth one, even though the third one also flopped. It didn't make even enough money overseas in China. And I'm just like, that's wild, because everyone I know who saw it, like, wanted to see it, but I think it just came out at a bizarre time.
And, well, yeah, but to be fair, its budget was $85 million. It made $346 million. It still made money.
That's the other crazy thing, too. It's just like, who's doing the math here? Do studios secretly want it to flop because they didn't like making it? Or you never really know, because it can be a really dirty game half the time, and half the time they seem to just fudge the numbers or what have you. But it's just weird because, this had an international cast. You know, you got
Tony Jaa.
Yeah, Tony Jaa and the Brute from Game of Thrones, and then freaking Toni Collette. Yeah. So here's what these all do well. All the villains in them are hammy. They have no purpose being in there. Martin Sokas, he was one of the elves of Galadriel in Lord of the Rings. He'd been in other movies like The Monkey's Mask. And
The hammy villains is what I like, though. That's old school Bond.
Absolutely. And
it's Dr. Evil.
He's fucking, not Dr. Evil. Although it does have some Dr. Evil kind of humor in there. It's very risque for PG-13. There's many moments where you're just waiting for him to get away with an F-bomb. And every time it happens, you're like, fucking thank you. About time you said it. But then it gets to that point where you are like, this is just a crazy kind of party movie. Just put it on. And anyone who wants to stay, they can stay till 2 a.m. and other times. If you don't like it, head out now. Let us enjoy the fun with our hammered and, you know, druggy friends. But it is one of those where it's like, Martin Sokas, he's a fucking great actor. So he also played the Geonosian leader, Pogo the Lesser, in Star Wars Attack of the Clones. He's also one of the deceiving guys in Kingdom of Heaven and the Crusades, you know, Ridley Scott epic. He just was always one of those other reliable, you know, New Zealand, Australian type actors, and he just would keep showing up. But when I saw him in The Equalizer, I was like, man, what a fucking great villain. There's a guy who's just intimidated by the hero, and yet just so diabolical and just down to rape and kill and fuck anything that gets in his way without us even having to see it. Just those eyes in and of themselves. And I see him went into the Badlands, and I thought he was kind of wasted there. My sister even made a crude joke saying a discount Ray Stevenson. I'm like, oh, shit. Ray Stevenson's kind of a discount Ray Stevenson. And I love Ray Stevenson. But I think he steals the fucking movie in the first one. He just absolutely just like that crazy rock star hair and just waving that Uzi around. Like,
and it fit that deck. It fit that time period perfect too.
I almost got so pissed off when I saw the commentary behind the scenes on Rob Cohen almost not using the the bridge stunt sequence because the stuntman who doubled Vin Diesel apparently died. I'm like,
yeah. Oh,
had he not used that, he would have been outed by every stuntman. You can't not use that.
He died on the second take parachuting through the columns. He hit one of the columns or something like that.
Yeah, just so
the
crazy
movie has the first take. And it's like, wow. Yeah, I mean.
Crazy. But so,
that's what, you know, when you're talking big action movies, I mean, it's always a possibility, right?
Mm-hmm. So Gregory J. Barnett, who's been a stunt coordinator and second unit director on shows like Baywatch and 24, was a lot of the guys who were doing stunts on this. I looked up some other info on some of the other stunt guys who I'm even friends with on Facebook, and they got crazy stories as well. Like, they were just like fitness instructors half the time when they weren't getting a stunt call or using their body, or they were doing softcore porn, or they were doing just some other kind of just campy TV show, and they all got on this movie. Even Chris Gunn has just like become a big stuntman, henchman, featured actor on various mainstream movie shows and indie films. Like,
so I mean, the movie did good for a lot of people.
Yeah, Danny Trejo is in this as an intimidating
henchman. Yeah, he's got a small part. Yeah,
gets his car exploded. So part two, my favorite villain, the whole fucking lot, just William Dafoe just cashing a paycheck and just taking it to the bank. Just,
yeah, I mean, Dafoe was good. Dafoe was probably the shine, the bright spot of this one for me.
He gets to have two infamous sequels to his name along with Speed 2.
Oh, it's right. He was the bad guy in that, wasn't he?
Right. He's the best part. So this is like, he knows what he's in, but he does just seem to just really, unlike
the creepier the character, the better he fits it.
There's that, and I love
when Family Guy made fun of him in the one episode where he slides out from under the bed and back in. It's like, yeah, that's probably what he does in real life.
I hope not. He's apparently a pretty cool guy, but
I've heard he's a cool guy.
But it is funny.
Good at that kind of a role. It's like
he just has fun with any role you hand him, and he's not gonna waste your fucking time. Well, or
yeah, even Boondock Saints, he was like a quasi good guy.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of people who are going to do the whole, oh, it's not politically correct nowadays, or oh, I found
but the rest of the world's not politically correct either.
No, but
and he's fantastic in
the
role.
He is great in it. I thought he stole the movie. He definitely one-upped it even more. I already liked the movie as a whole, but he really, in fact, ironically, the only time I felt like he just phoned it in, like he just did not want to be there, and it was just an easy, lazy script, so he was giving it minimum effort, it was probably actually his uncredited cameo in Boondock Saints 2. So that's it. But here, he's basically playing an Air Force One diehard type villain. I just like how he's just hamming it up. And don't get me wrong, there is some cool CGI in all of these, and then there is some absolute shit-tastic crappy, but that's just it. Like, it just, unlike the Transporter sequels, which I just felt like just got too just stupid for their own good.
Yeah.
Like, I think you can enjoy the show, and definitely the original movie still holds up. But like these, you can only accept them in a video game mode, but they kind of work on that level because this is Sony, you know, PlayStation 2 era.
Yeah.
Like, that's exactly what they were going for.
Isn't he playing in the first one? Isn't Diesel playing like a Tony Hawk game at some point? Even?
I think he is. And part two definitely had like some riffs. So composers, Randy Inelman of Heat scores the first movie. Marco Beltrami, who you might know for his scores of the Die Hard 4 and 5 and Terminator 3 and Free 10 to Yuma remake. Yeah. He does some weird takes where it's like, especially during the undercover mission at the White House, where he's trying to infiltrate the dinner. It's like, it goes between some Italian-type chorus riffs for the band that's playing at the White House, and then back to the electronic, you know, rock score. It's like, that's a wild mixture right there, but yeah. So
and the regular, I mean, and the songs themselves that were like by the pop stars or whatever were all pretty good too.
Not bad. Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't as good as the first soundtrack, I don't think, but it was solid.
Yeah. 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 Part three, I thought it was Junkie XL. It's actually Brian Tyler. You might know from just the Expendables and a bunch of other just giant movie scores. I think he's grown even more as a person instead of just trying to be just dark and become the next Graham Revell or whatever. I think mm-hmm. he's always just been a go-to. Is like, just give me the tone and I'll echo a bunch of it. Sometimes the score will be better than the movie, and other times it'll just be as good as the movie. But either way, it's a pretty cool, mysterious, moody score. And I think with that one, he just went ballistic with the bongo drums and other stuff, you know, just for depending on the location. And I think it's interesting just how these composers pretty much challenge themselves, even for, because again, you can't predict success and you don't know how anyone's going to react until they react.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't think anyone expected critics to like these. So to compliment them, I think they did their best by not giving a flying fuck.
So no, I think, I mean, I think I'm with you on that. I think the scores were solid. I think it
just
to tie the different types of things. Yeah. To tie it all together the way they did was pretty impressive.
But, compared to other movies where you'll watch them, you'll be like, God, why is this actor best known for that? Wow. Or till they get to their third or fourth stage of their career. And it's like, this is not at all like a Twilight, 50 Shades or Final Destination kind of thing where you're like, oh yeah, I have seen that guy in those infamous movies or whatever. It's like, no, it's not that kind of thing at all. It's like, these movies are cray cray. They are batshit bananas. That's all they got in them. And
I will
watch them a few times because they're crazy.
I will say, even the second one, while I think the plot's way convoluted and trying to be Tom Clancy and it didn't need to be, I will say there's still a lot of fun parts to watch.
It's like, I can't take
if you separate the plot and just focus, because the plot's a lot like not Dead of Honor,
Splinter Cell, kind of, in a way, because you open up with these guys suits.
And it has a slight feel of some of our fears in parts two,
kind of,
trying to overthrow the president, like the way the, you know, they're trying to overthrow the president, or the one of the guys trying to overthrow the president.
Oh, totally. And I think after part one, when they had guys like Warner Dime, you know, the main balding henchman with the giant guns. He'd been in other movies like The Lives of Others and Valkyrie, but that was kind of his big, you know, German to American transition. Yeah. And I just found it wild how in part two, they bring back, you know, not just Sam Jackson as Gibbons. He's in all three of them. Part three, he's clearly in a green screen. My filmmaker buddy pointed it out when we were in the theater. He's like, he is so not in the same scene as these guys. I mean, the backgrounds don't even match. It's a green screen. But Michael Roof, the guy playing the geek guy, you know, Toby.
Mm-hmm.
I had a lot of fun to prep for this episode because I was like, I know I've seen him in other things. He plays Maddox in Black Hawk Down. His last credit to date was the Dukes of Hazzard remake, and he'd done a bunch of comedy sketch shows and hosting gigs, and he apparently committed suicide at age 32 in 2009. Just fucking sad. And I see him in both the first two Triple X movies. I'm like, this guy is fucking funny. He's not even the star and he's giving it all. I think I could be wrong, but I think he's very funny because he's giving it everything it needs to be, which is I'm a parody of Q, you know, from James Bond. I'm your gadget man, but I'm going to participate in the missions with you and then make some off color commentary. Even if it's not funny, it still is like, it is what it is. I think I lost you. You okay there?
Sorry about that. You know what? You're talking about his character, the tech guy. You know, he reminded me of the character that was the tech guy in...
Siphon Filter video game?
No. Not the boys. It was a movie with... the guy that played Negan was in a movie with... they're a group of soldiers kind of left for dead or whatever. And they're like
the losers.
He's kind of like the tech guy in that.
He is kind of like,
he's like real snark. There's like some snark there. Yeah.
This, and that's just what it means. Cause I mean,
I love that movie. No one else liked it. I thought it was great.
I need to rewatch it. I recall it being,
it was based off a comic book. What do you expect? You know, I mean,
I think these ones, I'm surprised they have not made a comic book or even a video game. But at the same time, I mean, they're more video game than a video game.
Yeah, and how do you have a video game, a movie that's a video game?
It would just probably been lame. They would have hired a Vin Diesel or Ice Cube sound alike with Sam Jackson coming back, because everyone can afford Sam Jackson. He doesn't turn it down. But
yeah, I was gonna say, at this point, I think he's just like, yeah, sure, I'll do it.
And part
he's making, he's got that insurance company money. He don't need to worry about movies.
Oh, totally. And part three, you got Donnie Yen pistol whipping people, and Ruby Rose doing just impossible Mission Impossible type stunts. And it's like, if anything, I think that's what they're all. It, you know, I Spy, the TV show remake with Owen Wilson and Eddie Murphy, came out around the same time, and I think it was both those movies were going with the same mind. Like, you've seen everything, Entrapment, you know, GoldenEye. Mm-hmm. Again, well, we're pretty much just doing a spoof. We're 48 Hours meets Mission Impossible. That's all we are. Just talk some shit, blow some shit up, and just be a, I don't want to say guilty pleasure, but just be junk food and proud of it. You know, just not everything has to be Wendy's or Burger King or even McDonald's. It can be a different
kind of Jack in the Box.
Yeah. everyone does the whole Reese's or Butterfinger. Yeah. I eat Justin's.
You know what? You know
an audience for it.
You know what character I did like too in the third one was Nina Dobrev's character, Becky.
The
little librarian. She's kind of like librarian-esque.
When I saw her in the movie, I was wondering the whole time, like, where have I seen this gorgeous?
Oh, she's been in a lot of stuff.
Porn star looking chick.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if she'd been in that, but she'd been in a lot of stuff.
No, I knew she had been in Vampire Diaries. She was married to her co-star Ian Somerhalder,
but she was like the perfect. She had the perfect look for like the little, because she, you know, she's totally introverted, and she's a weapon like specialist.
Ukrainian, I think, in real life.
Yeah, I think she is. Yeah.
But like you say. She was acceptable because it's like she didn't take this all that seriously.
Oh, she's Canadian.
Oh, okay, well, fuck.
Bulgarian, Canadian, Bulgarian descent. Citizenship is Canadian and Bulgarian.
That explains why she's been on a lot of those kinds of productions.
Degrassi and all that. Yeah.
There you go.
But no, I liked the.
She gave it the right amount of oomph. Like, she's taking it serious, but not in a way where she's overdoing it. Like, she's not like. Early Tyrese or maybe
she kind of saves the day.
She kind of saves the day. It is hysterical
with the bulletproof vest.
There's that, and the contrast when she's going on a mission with Ruby Rose, and Ruby Rose is going total ape shit. She's heavily tattooed, just like Azar Argento and Vin Diesel.
Yeah.
And yet she's like, okay, hotshot, I'll try and be on your badass level. I'll give it my best shot. And I love how. Again, just in the third movie, you know, again, so part one, it was, you know, it was Vin's turn to just, you know, kind of just be a superstar.
Mm-hmm.
Part two was pretty much, okay, fuck you all. We're firing you. We're hiring some new guys who everyone likes. And then we're making it.
He dropped, him and Rob Cohen dropped out because they didn't like the script.
So there you go. And it was like, personally, I think it would have worked with anyone, any shape or form. They're all such different ass movies. Because like part three, what is part three? One minute it's a computer hacker movie, then it's a surfboard movie, then it's kind of a East meets West meets India movie. So it's like, it's just whatever. And
it seemed to be easy. The plot didn't seem as convoluted as the second one, though. It was a lot more. It seemed a lot more straightforward to me.
I think that's just it. It's just like part one was pretty much go through a maze of henchmen. Mm-hmm. And then part two was there's going to be endless amounts of spies going from garage to garage. Let's go. Steroids.
It's like, God damn it. We rented a warehouse and we're going to use it.
Yeah. The art of, and I was cool with this at this point. Cause like you, I was a spy guy. I was big into the sniper movies with Tom Berenger. And if I wasn't watching something like Mission Impossible, or Born Identity, I'd even watch movies like The Art of War with Wesley Snipes.
It was a good movie.
I didn't care. It's like just, or Eraser with Schwarzenegger. It's like, do a fun.
Underrated.
Totally. It's just, if you're not going to be high class like Enemy of the State, then yes, you can be like Eraser where you're kind of junky, but you're made with heart and soul. And if you're not, if you're soulless, but you're still having fun, that's fine too. Just be. Like you say, self-aware and just a simple slugfest. Mm-hmm. It, as long as it doesn't drag and I don't have to force myself to get to the end of the tunnel or I can see why you made whatever movie
mm-hmm.
without being furious, Yep. That's
Triple X3, the X and the Furious. Wait, what?
You know, don't rule it out. I mean, Paramount.
You know, here's the thing. So, like, Rob Cohen originally wanted this to be a whole long franchise, with the only character being the same was Triple X.
So I have a soundbite for you. I remember seeing in an interview, he was like promoting like Stealth, which was a crazy like Terminator knockoff, you know.
Yeah. The AI goes nuts. And yeah.
And I always struggle to get for that. And I just remember it more for Jessica Biel and Jamie Foxx.
Yeah. Saying, it's just,
we did that movie for money. But
yeah, I can't. Yeah.
I think here's the thing.
He passed on the second one of these for that.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And apparently he seems to take a lot of his movies serious. Like, he was promoting Mummy Free. And he just wanted to talk nonstop about his Buddhism. I'm like, well, cool that you're Buddhist, but this is a silly blockbuster movie, you know?
Yeah.
We came here to see Brendan Fraser pull in Indiana Jones and shoot up some zombie-type movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know why you're talking about, you know, the East, you know, meets West connection and all that. That's been done. And Dragonheart, same thing. There's a lot of plot holes in that otherwise kind of fun, decent, flawed movie. And I think that's just it too. He was just talking nonstop about the technology and Triple X and Stealth. I'm like, dude, no one went to the movie for the technology. We went because it was crazy, silly. You know, it's like, I think he has a big head. Because, like,
to be fair, I don't know if anyone went to see Stealth.
No, but I mean, I don't think
I like bad movies, but even I was like, what is this? Like, it's an idea that could have been good, but
even The Boy Next Door pissed me off. And I like trashy movies that are kind of one of those, like, oh, this is a naughty 2 a.m. movie that I'm going to make fun of. And that movie just pissed me off because there really was, it just took itself so seriously. I'm like, have you guys never read a script before? This is no different than every other, you know, just psycho thriller of the 90s. And it was just so funny because I heard the How Did This Get Made episode, and they played the commentary track, and he just pretty much was like, I want to photograph the queen and all this. I'm like, oh my god, dude, try making the movie believable. Omit some lines here. No, not happening. So for part three, you know, DJ Caruso gets a lot of shit. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt for the fact that he just kind of just stepped back and just said, let's just make this an exciting movie.
I think three was a lot more in the same spirit as one.
And it's just, it doesn't go on too long. And
no,
I kid you not. So my friend and I, we're all into all kinds of crazy movies. We'll watch anything, whether it's something stupid like a WWE movie, mm-hmm. or just, like you say, the billionth Aliens, Fifth Element, you know, Star Wars knockoff. And, you know, and it doesn't have to be great. It can be something where you're just like, hey, you know, for what it is, I don't think it was that bad, like John Carter or what have you. But then we're prepared to watch some other movie where it's like, okay, everyone hates it, but we're just like, meh, there's far worse stuff out there. You know, I don't think Valerian is the worst of the year, but a lot of people hate it. And I'm like, okay, well, teach their own. But we were watching this, and we didn't just laugh. We didn't just guffaw. We stomach busted laughing. We're just like, oh, just like, because we're watching this at like a midnight screening. I had to get home and barely got 4 hours of sleep for work, you know, back when I was just starting my graveyard shift with security. Mm-hmm. And we are just guffawing at the scene where Donnie Yen and Vin first meet. And, you know, we see them, you know, staring each other down. And next thing you know, the following scene, they're clearly just right across the room from each other. I'm like, that's fucking funny and awesome. And it's definitely aware. And yet it's just kind of going for it. They just can't help it. This is a crazy Power Rangers episode, you know?
Yeah, well, what you know what? It reminds me of, so we always say it's like a video game. Do you remember when Saints Row came out? Or were you
seeing 1,000%.
And okay, so Grand Theft Auto 3 had just hit, and it was a...
And Just Fantastic, Cause, remember?
Awesome. Cause yeah.
It's like, well, everyone had to be crazier than the other.
Well, the problem was Saints Row was trying to be serious in the first game, but they just couldn't compete with Grand Theft Auto. Like, it was cartoony graphics. So
they
and
got
stuff.
Better.
So they just said the hell with it and went off the rails. By the fourth one, you're beating people with purple dildos.
So they pulled a leprechaun.
Yeah, so just go
crazier you go, and
that's and really that's what Fast and the Furious did, and that's kind of what I'm expecting from the Triple X series, right? Like I'm expecting a fourth, fifth, and sixth movie, just because I have a feeling it's going to almost turn into like Bond meets the Expendables at some point.
I think they got the closest to Expendables definitely after starting out as kind of a PlayStation James Bond.
Yeah, I mean, having and it worked at the time. It worked fine, you know. But when you did the second movie where you had like so many different characters and so much other stuff going on, now and then you went back to the third one, which became like you said, you're just watching it going, "Oh my god, that's awesome!" And it's horrible but great at the same time.
That's basically it. It's like both a mix between us, so bad it's good, and kind of trashy.
It was the highest grossing movie for that production company too. Who was it? It was
Revolution Studios.
Yeah, it was like their highest grossing movie of all time.
And they just went for it. They're just like,
yeah. So I'm guessing they're going to do the same. I'm guessing they're going to do the same thing again, you know.
If they don't, I don't know why they wouldn't, because I mean everyone has an audience, you know. For all the people who weren't watching, for instance, Halloween or Nightmare on Elm Street, you were part of the Jason Voorhees crowd. So it's just like,
yeah, there's always something. Yeah, you know, and I, you know, it's funny. I said how the second movie didn't feel quite right to me. So there's a quote from Vin Diesel where when he decided not to do it, he said he didn't like the script because it didn't feel Triple X for him. And remember, I said it felt like a watered down Clancy one, like it was so complicated. Like you said, there's warehouse after warehouse and spy after spy.
So with all these movies,
I mean, they're all fun to watch, but you know,
stupid as they are, I can't take my eyes off the screen. No matter, it's like a lesser Transformers, but just more bad shit. To where you're just like, just shut up and enjoy the carnage, Bad Boys 2 style. Like, you're just like, it's crazy, but it's not by Michael Bay. It's by Vin Diesel and associates.
Yeah, and you're watching it going, if this is what spies are really like, that's awesome.
Oh, 1,000%. Yeah, I would rather live in this world versus any other world where I'm just going to be known for dying or just ruining the franchise. Like, this was just crazy, crazy, crazy. And like you say, it is just one of those, it just kind of steps back. And even when it's too much, it's like, it never slows down to where you can possibly get bored. Anyone who says, I'm bored at anything, even if people who hate action movies, you're gonna just kind of watch this, and it's kind of like, it's almost like 1995's Fair Game.
Yeah, yeah.
Billy Baldwin and Cindy Crawford and meets. I mean, personally,
that was such a fun. Again, like you said, it's a fun movie.
It's a fun movie.
It's not a masterpiece, but it's fun to watch.
I'm personally more of a Assassins with Stallone and Banderas, and
that's a great movie too.
Ballistic Action versus Sever, I think, I legit love. And you'll actually find a bunch of people who like that no different than a Transporter or Jason Bourne type movie or a Racer type film. So I'm just like, with these, they're like, okay, they may not be good movies, but they are good junky action movies.
They'll make money.
They will make money.
Yeah.
They're good comedies, intentional or unintentional. They're trashy.
I'm going to say that I think the people making these and the people starring in these have an idea not to take it too seriously.
Yes. This is
mainly like when he breaks the third wall, like you were saying in the third one.
He says, I live for this shit.
Or fourth wall,
And then he makes, even half the 3D effects in that were pretty much, you know, just one-ups to making fun of 3D in a way. And they even had moments where I think they just even dissed a few other movies and shows. And I mean, just having the way they even brought Ice Cube back in that one, like there's like, I think they even have a funny line, like, who else could we possibly bring into this? And then he just comes out of nowhere and just does exactly what he did to start off the movie too, which is like, just take out a giant ass grenade launcher that can't do anything like that and decimate about 20 people with nine, you know, we're bloody. This would instantly get an R, but it's PG-13. So they can blow up people nonstop in these, you know.
Yep.
As long as there's no gore or exploding heads. And so I, in a way, yes, this is like if you were to take the logic of a Puppet Master type movie and put it in, just something that's not starring Arnie or Stallone. And
you know what? It's like a non-retiree version of Red.
That's a good remember point.
Remember in Red, like they launched the rocket. She fires the rocket at him, and he shoots it with the gun.
That's so true. Because like
it's basically this, only not retirees.
Yeah, because like Red, I don't know why it and other movies just make more money just because they got a better known cast and they're just more. They're not really. I guess it's just because they just got.
Well, Red made more movies because Malkovich was fantastic. I mean, I think he just played himself, but he was fantastic.
Him and Mary Louise Parker and Helen Mirren were kind of contributing factors. Even Anthony Hopkins is practically playing a Hans Gruber, James Bond type villain. But
yeah,
is this like, I guess it's just those, they're kind of quicker. So, and everyone just liked the cast. And these are unfiltered. So they're not going to be for everyone.
Yeah.
But
these are for our generation.
Yeah, these are kind right,
like,
of just...
These are more for people that are like between, say, 30 and 50.
Oh, totally.
They grew up on like action from the 80s and 90s.
Right. So like this came out after every heist or spy movie was trying to be like Entrapment or Ocean's 11 or a Mission Impossible Light. And yeah, so again, just like we've compared all the food parallels, that is like for all the... fuck. And for those who, there's those who play basketball and there's those who play football and those who play baseball. And then there's some of us who just play 50 rounds of bowling while listening to metal, you know, just pick your poison. There's an alternative. It's okay.
And then there's those of us that play extreme PlayStation 2 games while listening to metal. That's who these are for.
There you go. There you go. And then made lasagna for everybody. You know.
There you go.
And it's like, these are all steroid induced, so they have zero filter. It's like, so even go to the video sites. Like, it's okay to have options there too. For like, this is the Tubi version of spy movies.
Mm-hmm. If you, that's a good way of looking at it.
If you don't, there's a lot of people going to that because they don't want to. They're leaving Netflix, and a lot of the movies they were going to watch just left Prime, and they'd rather watch the TV shows that they're not going to make time for just yet. So it's just like, yeah, you're going to probably watch Tubi or record something off of, you know, TV, yep, or watch one of the other ones that you haven't used in a while, like Shudder or freaking, what's the other one that everyone uses? Hulu, you know? So,
Hulu, yeah.
Is this like this, or even just with video sites? If you
would. Hey, on CinemaScore, this has an A- out of an A+ to F scale. I mean, some people like
Part 3.
Yeah, Part 3.
I believe it.
It's about 44. I think it's about 50% on Rotten Tomatoes.
The other ones,
so it's average.
What the other ones get CinemaScore wise?
Oh, I don't know if the other ones had it listed.
I know they all got like, you know. They were in the red or yellow, mixed to negative reviews. They were never going to get good critical reviews.
Rotten Tomatoes is always for anything action related, unless it's art house or cans or something.
I get pissed when I
see Rotten Tomatoes is like two stars. Yeah, fuck you.
I know. I get pissed when I have other podcasters on here acting like
the first one was an A- on CinemaScore, and the second one, let's see, where's this CinemaScore? B+.
Go figure. No one gave a fuck that it was coming out at the same time.
So these are people that are like us that are like, wow, that's totally awesome and fake, but I love it.
That's stupid as fuck. I'm watching it again 5 more times after school. And so that is what I'm saying with Power Rangers. It's like, no one goes to Power Rangers for high art, but everybody secretly likes Power Rangers. Because guess what? It's like, you're getting away with fighting in PG, you know, rated violence with a Ninja Turtles type villain and just Hong Kong type wannabes kicking the shit out of each other on a Japanese film set, you know? So it's just like, yeah, that's exactly what these are. These aren't James Bond. These aren't Mission Impossible. So they're not Ocean's 11. What are they? They're fucking whatever they want to be, and that's okay. And
like we'll come up with a term for that. We got to come up for a term for movies like this. I just don't know it yet. I'll work on it.
To quote old comrades at the Midnight Movie Cowboys, shit fucky.
That works.
But that sounds more derogatory, and I don't want to sound like I'm derogatory. So.
Well, that's a good point.
That shit bananas.
Yeah, but it's, no, it's got to be something like, it's for the whole genre of like 80s, 90s, and 2000s action.
Well, because like, I'm with
popcorn, like, action. I don't know. We'll come up with something.
It's too silly to be just popcorn because it is kind of involving your brain, even though it's fucking stupid. So, I just steroid rage, popcorn,
steroid action,
spectacular. I don't know.
There you go. All right, man. Well, I hate to cut it short, but I gotta get moving.
I will, and I'm totally with you. I hate how everyone's like, oh, Rotten Tomatoes attacks all my favorite comedy and horror movies. I'm like, join the fucking club.
Yeah,
they always hate action movies unless it's a John Wick.
Yep.
So yeah, I'm with you. Like, watch all these fucking movies and just go bananas.
Just watch them for what they are. Yeah. While
smoking a joint. Enjoy it. And just being like, why am I fucking watching this? This is stupid. I'm going to probably watch it again with some other friends and get their take and see how they react. Nice. I don't regret watching any of them.
I enjoy them because, like you said, they're somewhat mindless. There's enough plot where you're like, oh, okay.
You won't be worried about your kids seeing something they shouldn't see.
Yeah.
And they have enough naughty language to where most people can just say, I'll pretend I didn't hear that. It's like,
yeah,
my God, these are too stupid to take seriously and worry about the content. It's crazy. Watch them. So thank you for being on here.
Yeah, no problem, man. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I will see you next time.
All right. Take care, man.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up.